Okay.
Hallo, hallo. We'd like to start very punctually because we only have Professor Prosch here for 45 minutes, and we would like to make most use of his presentation on digital sovereignty today. A short and warm welcome on behalf of NIST Lab. This is sort of our kickoff for this term's NIST lectures, which will take place every last Friday of the month during the lunch break. We have an open setup for this, so first of all I would like to welcome all the students, especially also all the new students who just started their semester. I would also like to welcome members of CSIS, particularly also from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I'd also like to welcome a representative from the Norwegian Institute of International Affairs, who's here amongst us. And of course, all the researchers from NIST Lab. I'm very proud that we can have Professor Prosch as our first speaker here today for this term. He has been a full professor in the institute and is heading this Institute of Applied Information Processing and Communications since 1984 at the Technical University of Graz. Since 2001, he has also been Chief Information Officer of the Federal Government of Austria. Before that, he was also acting as, or since 2003, he was chairman of the Board of Trustees of the Stiftung Secure Information and Communication Technologies in Graz. And from 2007 to 2011, he was the chairman of the Management Board of the European Network Information Security Agency in ENISA, which probably most people who work in security are very well familiar with. And I think most of our PhD students also went there on a summer school trip this week, actually, to visit. Besides that, he has also been on the advisory board for the European Commission's vice presidents, Nelly Kroes and Maroš Šefčovič. And so after all this information and experience that he has now chosen the topic of digital sovereignty, which we just discussed in a smaller setup, and I think it's very an important issue also from a Norwegian point of view. So welcome, the floor is yours.
Thank you for the kind introduction. Does it work? Hopefully. Yeah. Can you hear me? Yeah. Thank you for the kind introduction. And you have seen a quite broad title, Digital Sovereignty, so I will just choose a few flashlights to point at some aspects of this. And one aspect around this is, where are things in IT happening around the world? And this is sort of distributing in the sense that most things that are globally happening in systems are happening in the US, around the US. Things that are happening in hardware are happening in the east side of the globe, and Europe is still thinking about where its place is. And that is certainly an aspect of governance of IT. Now, the second point I would like to point at is that most people that are using, like, mobile phones, I see around some of them, are not aware that that these phones are permanently connected with a TCP/IP connection to the provider, like Microsoft, like Google, or Apple. So each of you is now connected with an open TCP/IP connection with one of these. And the potential of using this or abusing this might be seen as crucial or as not wanted. Europe has not yet decided to change this situation in imposing that such communication hubs, which are needed, like for WhatsApp, like for instant messaging, etc., etc., are user selectable. So we have still a, from the government point of view, a very unsatisfactory situation. A second thing which has to be mentioned in this context is dynamic reconfiguration. If I'm here, I'm roaming, which means that I get a very long SMS, which totally changes my phone. And this SMS is not really authenticated. So anyone who wants to tap into your communication could do that by abusing these mechanisms, which is standardized, which is not really a secure tool. A third thing, which is not on this slide, is that even if you are communicating inside a country, you are not sure that the whole switching process is not happening somewhere in the world. We have overcapacity in switching, which means that perhaps if I'm calling you here, this is done via Slovenia, which would be a quite good guess, because they have a very high potential in switching. So that might not be a problem at all from the legal point of view, but if it's not Slovenia, but it might, if that is Turkey, we might be seeing that in a different way. And we're going even further. If you think about online collaboration, if you're using Google Docs, who is using Google Docs? If you're using Office 365 or something like that. And that means that everything you are typing is online reflected somewhere and could be used or abused this way. So we need, we certainly need awareness, we need tools to handle this. And this online correlation will be increasingly a problem. I think in a 5-10 years time, you will not have locally installed copies of Word or what have you, because you have these tablets, you have this changing systems, you have your mobile phone where you want to access your documents, etc., etc. And going this cross-platform situation only works in a cloud-based situation, and there might falling out some information out of these clouds, as you see in here. And we get disturbed all the time. You know, you probably have seen this thing about Microsoft being asked to deliver information they have in Ireland. Well, Microsoft is fighting against that decision. But that is confusing us. We don't know what will be happening at the end. And that is not only in the software area. When it comes to cloud, cloud provider, major cloud provider like Google, like Amazon, like Microsoft, they are not caring about the legal provisions we have in Europe. They are not compatible with the eIDAS regulation, which has been issued in 2014 and will come into force ultimately mid next year, because they just see the market in the private sector, and the European government market is a small part they, at least at the moment, don't really care about. So we have to see that these mechanisms are taken up, and it might be a very hard process. In 2011, we had a European regulation which says that every mobile phone has to have a plug for the power supply which is specified and standardized. And there are still phones which don't care. If you have an iPhone, you know that. And this is the perspective we have to face when it comes to regulation we make in Europe. And we expect providers which are mixed US, European, Asian providers that fulfill that. Now, if you go a little bit down the road into the hardware, there is uncertainties that come in from there as well. We recently, not very recently, but a few months ago, have been made aware that using a USB device might be quite an influence on your... is there a problem? I should move. Okay, no problem to move. No problem to move at all. Can you advise me to get this picture so that I can read it at all? Here. Because I can't read, and probably it would be easier if I don't need to turn around every time. Okay. An interesting solution. You get a feedback. Thank you. Thank you. Then I already also see how it works. Thank you. Okay. No problem at all. We have seen that even the hardware situation can be manipulated in a way which really affects our privacy, which affects our security, and therefore we have to think about that. The basic ingredient of security is identity. We have to see that basically everything we can do in terms of security is identity, and identity needs this doesn't really work. So if you give me 2 seconds, I will use a different I will try to no, it will not work. I will try to switch around my head and see what is on the screen and remember. the basic ingredients of security is identity. We have to base that on a solid technology, and that has been taken up with the IDAS regulation. Perfect. That has been taken up with the IDAS regulation as I mentioned already. It needs to be multi-factor, it needs to be crypto-based, it needs to be resilient against replaying it, and it needs to be simple enough so that you really use it. We have all that, we have these infrastructures, but what we see is that users don't take up. So it needs to be adequately simple. It must serve the user's needs. It must be available over tablets, mobiles, PCs in a seamless way. But we have seen that with tablets and mobiles, we don't have external devices. So when it comes to take up, we have to make some compromise in that sense. And just to give you one example, I will show you how the Austrian compromise on EID works. We have chosen to make it very simple using just mobile phones. It's still called citizen card, but it's not a physical card in general, but it's an EID scheme based on electronic signature and based on cryptography. And the way it works is very simple. You would go to a website and just enter your phone number. You would enter a security password, which just ensures that you don't get messed up with SMSs. And after entering your mobile phone, basically the system makes a loop of an alternate channel and sends you a one-time password over SMS. And after you enter this SMS, you are logged into the system. So from the user's point of view, it's much easier than remembering hundreds of passwords. But what happens behind that? Behind that, you must ensure that this is still privacy preserving, which means if you are in healthcare, if you are in tax, if you are in a private sector application, the identities which are handled there need to be different. And how we manage this, and this is in a similar way done in Denmark and in Germany and in other member states in the meanwhile, is that we have an identity which describes the person, but this identity is never used, but we derive from that identity in a one-way function a sector-specific identity. And so that if you are a company, you can always see that this is the same person coming to you in an electronic way. If you are in healthcare, you see independent where you go, you see this is the same person. But if you want to know if this person which you have identified in healthcare is the same person as the one who you have identified here in the tax system, you have no chance to do so, because you have the one-way function from the primary identity to the sector-specific identity, and in no case the primary identity is communicated. Now, this was just a short trip into what we have done in Austria, what is the basic identity scheme we have implemented in Austria. The whole thing has begun with the Stork project, which is a European large-scale pilot where 14 member states took place, where we agreed among the project members that we have a minimum security level that has been fulfilled, that we want to have mutual recognition, and you see all these aspects being taken up on the IDAS regulation, that we focus on interoperability, which means if you log in into the Austrian system with your Luxembourg or Lithuanian or Portuguese identity mechanisms, which might be a card or which might be a different mechanism, you get immediately transferred into the service. So if I log in into the Commission services, I can use this mechanism I just showed you, and if someone else from Germany, Luxembourg, wherever it comes, who has implemented a similar way, can do it the same way. That is interoperability without having a technology which is European-wide identical. This is the compromise. We are Europe is in thinks in a way that each member state is very autonomous, so the mechanisms are on the member state level, but the interoperability is assured. And it is applicable for public and private services. Now, the IDAS regulation is there for public services, and all public services that claim a certain level of quality have to comply with the regulation. The private sector can use and make use of this infrastructure. And we will see how it works. And it, at the end, it will be the private sector who determines whether we will have a broad deployment or whether it will be somewhere in the corner and not used. Because if you are going to your bank, you do that like every week, like every few days. How often do you think you have to deal with government? We have the statistics of Austria. It's 1.5 incidents per year. And one out of that is tax. So every other year you have something to do with government. If you have no, if you are an average person, and you have to do everything every year with tax, you will not boost any technology by this frequency. But you have you have your tax, you have your banking accounts, you have your trading platforms, etc., etc. And if these are going on, that's working. For example, at my university, if you want to change your password, you still could log on with your password. But if you want to change your password, you have to use this identity scheme, which makes so you have you can use it on any device with any conventional mechanisms. If you so wished, you can also use it with the EID scheme. But if you want to, and you have to change it every few months, if you want to make that change, then you are locked into, and you're reminded to use that. Now, how do we reach a comprehensive security service? The most problematic thing is service transition. You are in an email, you click a link. Well, that, I never understand why we are in a situation where we do that, because what you click on the link isn't security-wise not connected to what you see at the end in the browser. So any time you change from one service to the other, from web, from Facebook to web, to another web service, from email to an application, etc., etc., there you draw, you go down on your security scale very low, and then you climb up. Usually without re-identification. In many cases, like in cloud applications, EID lacks security. If you log on to Google, you use UseID password. Even if you use Microsoft Azure, they might show you something which looks like quite okay, but if you go down the road and look into the code, it's a long, like 64 whatever byte string, which is a constant string, which is then used to identify. So if somebody spies on your device, like you are in a public on a public terminal, this person might get hold of your identification, and if you are doing serious things on that, that might be or might not be a problem. Now, what we have learned over the last 15, 20 years, I'm sorry that my voice is not very good today, but I hope it works, is that awareness is key, but it's not a tool to manage things. We have worked increasingly on awareness, but the number of incidents has stayed stable. So we will not decrease, it would be a wishful dream if you think that raising awareness will decrease incidents substantially. What might influence incidents substantially to what we have seen is liability and the ways we make contracts. And there we are in a very unacceptable situation. For example, if you use Amazon Cloud, Amazon will be committed to be liable up to the amount to pay this year, which is like nothing. If you pay a few thousand euros as a community for a service, and then you have an incident, which is, you know, 10,000, millions of euros, they will say, well, we agreed to be liable up to what you have paid. And there's no way to change the contract. The contract has to be under US law, etc., etc. Thank you very much. EID and improving contracts are, in this context, most probably the tools which are most promising to change things. Cloud needs to change and to respect the needs. The first need is when you're using a cloud service, you don't know where is the service, where is the storage, and where is the communication. Now, for the storage, some companies like Microsoft are going in a situation where they promise you, and I put it that way, they promise you to have your data in Ireland, or to have your data in Germany, or to have your data in Austria. And, well, let's believe that promise. But it doesn't mean that the data, even if you call the service, are transmitted directly. They might be transmitted through Korea, what have you, for one or the other reason. And you have to be very aware that each time a packet transits a jurisdiction, this jurisdiction applies. So my example, you are making a phone call from here to outside to your friend. For some reason, this is routed through Turkey. Then the interception of Turkey, the legal interception of Turkey, applies. So you will be totally exposed to any arbitrary jurisdiction in communication. That is something we have to at least to face when we use that. Either we use cloud only for, you know, games and things like that, then we can accept it, or we change it in one or the other way. Users and services must have the sole control over data, not anyone else. That is something which is not available in at large already, but companies are working on that. Major companies are working on that in a way so that the user can access data, but the cloud service provider itself should not be able to read the data, which makes a very different setup, which makes the request to separate the service provider from the trust and security provider. At the end, there is need for lawful access. You know, we will not eliminate crime, and we will have to provide the appropriate mechanism for lawful access. But we have a problem when we mix private and public applications, go cross border. Then the lawful interception will also have to take into account that this might mean that, for example, cloud services run in Romania, there is an interception because of some incident, and this cloud service is hosting a service from the state of Luxembourg, then Romania would access data of the state of Luxembourg. You know, if that is without agreement done on physical things, this is called war. And in cyber, we are not using these terms, but it's still a very critical situation, and there's no agreement on that. We need international agreement. What happens in this mixed situations, and how do we handle this? It should be the user who defines and who has the control on which liability, on which jurisdiction he is working on. It should be awareness at the point in time where the communication is happening. For example, if you know that this packet, which you just received, is going through jurisdiction of Russia and Romania, Germany, Austria, and then coming back to Norway, you might behave differently as if it you see it has not left Norway. From a legal point of view, from a jurisdiction point of view, from an interception point of view, from a espionage point of view, what have you. This transparent information is something we still have as states to work on. There's no no agreement as yet to have that. Now, the landscape of EID security and mobile devices is complicated. You have varying operating system structures, like on mobile phones, where you have the sandbox principle in general, like on PCs, where you have the system principle, which is hierarchical, and where you have the tablets, which usually have a mixed situation, which might be the sandbox model mixed with a hierarchical operating system model. At the end, it means when you mix these three things, which is mobile devices, security, and cloud services, that you do not want to be two of them in the same under the same under control of the same institution. If you have security services and cloud services under control of the same institution, they can play with your data, modifying, changing, intercepting, what have you. There is some advances in that direction. Thales, for example, which is a French security company, they have an agreement with Microsoft that for the rights management system, everything goes through their devices and Microsoft cannot read them. This is on a very small and specific area. This is probably going to evolve versus a standard, and we're working together with them to find the appropriate areas of standardizing that. The problematic thing is that the least secure is the most successful. If you look into, you know, Apple, you might like it or might not like it, but from a security point of view, it's very compact. I don't say that Apple is good or bad, but it's from a security point of view very compact. Basically, the same with Windows and the Windows Phone. It's from the security point of view very compact. When you go into Android, it's very diverse. You have so many versions of Android. But still, if you look into the take up, that is the point of view you have to focus, because as you see in the number of devices already now and even in the future, we will mainly have to see that. What is the challenges? What are the challenges? The guarantee for a security perimeter, so that you really can understand your security. The mapping of the security into requirements into cloud, which is not done just for commercial reasons. The main cloud providers will not go for the small area of security, even if they have it in the internal concepts, because they say, we still make so much money. If we make this a little nicer, we will make more money than if we make it a little more secure. And this is the problem. We have to push them, somehow to push them towards these security requirements. And it's the same with the services themselves. And ensuring responsibility and awareness is the same, is also a very critical thing. Now, what we have tried to work towards, and how we see the situation to be handled is that you have on one hand your devices, which might be PCs, which might be tablets, which might be mobile phones, with a minimum on requirements of devices. because only if you minimize the requirements of devices and minimize the requirements on applications, you will have a you can expect that this will have a long lasting impact. Otherwise you will have to change your environment every few months, every year, every time a new version of Android comes out, etc., etc., and it will not work. On the other hand, if you store like critical material, critical data, keys, etc., etc., in your devices, you have to be aware that thousands and ten thousands of devices are lost each year, which means that ten thousands of keys are somewhere out, and people are, you know, using very simple patterns like 1 or X to access their phones, which means their mobile devices, or very simple codes, which means that someone who gets hold of your device might get hold of your keys. Security services, including keys, must, if it comes to a certain level of security, be out of and not in the control of the device, but only in control of the identity, which you can easier change. You recognize your phone is lost, you go to a computer and say, well, stop this identity until I find it again, which is usually a mechanism which goes very simple. You can call your provider and say, stop it. The provider has no mechanism to impersonate you, but he can stop the service for this identity. And then it becomes very complicated after that, because it's easy when you just access static data. You know, having a file encrypted, having encryption services which you trust, and retrieving that works. It becomes already very complicated if you try to search, if you try to manage your emails, because you're used to the situation in your emails. Well, let's see, which emails did I get from Linda? And then you get all, which is not possible if you do that encrypted, because it would need that the service could decrypt at least the recipients or something like that. And you want to go deeper into that. So we have lots of problems to solve. Security has some, in many ways, impact on usability, and we want to use to minimize that. When it comes to cloud, well, theoretically, you could use homeomorphic encryption. You're all aware, most probably in computer science, you're all aware homeomorphic encryption would mean that you can work on encrypted data, but it is not realistic in the general case. You can use that. Salesforce, for example, is using that for amounts. If you just, you know, sum up amounts, the effort you need there in terms of computing is somewhat in the range of workable. But if you want to be used in a mail service just to search around, it's just impossible. There's a lot of research to be done to make that feasible. And then you have to count, what does cloud processing give you in terms of more convenience, more efficiency? And now you increase, you decrease the efficiency and convenience by including the encryption burden, and you still have to manage the commercial thing. You have the national interests, which are very different across states. And you have the managing of complexity, and you want to have the encryption and the security under national or user control, depending whether you are in the private sector or whether in the public sector. You want to have the possibility. It doesn't mean that you only want to use that, but in some cases, that is some needs. From the product cycle, we also have a gap which is not covered. When it comes to innovation, from innovation to products, industry has really a push to make that short, because they want to be on the market, they want to make money. Also, when it comes from the product to regulation, industry has some interest to make that period short, because they want to remove hurdles. if new regulation comes, they have to adopt. So they want to have regulations stable as early as possible to have the cash cow in that product. But then when it comes from a regulation to standards, there's no one who assists the user to make that period, which would be in the interest of user, to be short. And we see that when you go to Google Cloud, when you go to Amazon, when you go to Asia, you see that they all have different setups. And it's very subtle. For example, managing web forms sounds very simple, but it's done totally different, or managing emails. It's done totally different in Google and in Amazon. So you cannot just take your cloud application from Google to Amazon to Asia and continue. That will not work. And that is in their interest, because they if there's a hurdle in between moving from A to B, they can raise their price until people are jumping over, as long as this is not done. And there, we need someone who is pushing the standards to happen as early as possible. When it comes to technology, we have seen that I/O devices are not feasible in mobile situations. It's more going towards sensors, integration, and these things. Where's the risk? There's a big change in risk, because when it comes to cloud, the big risk is the provisioning. So far, the user was accessing through the internet. When it comes to cloud, the provider is accessing through the internet. And that is a totally different situation, which is just not understood by most people. Also, when it comes to identity, it's not well understood that there's a difference between identity in the private sector and the public sector. In the public sector, you are born and sometimes obviously will vanish from this planet, but in between you are the same person. In the private sector, you buy something, and if you have no interest in this commercial threat, your identity on this can be deleted. If you buy two things, you might or might not have interest that this is the same identity. And we have to cope with this situation. Now my final situation, and I will run through that because I get signed that we have to finish soon. The biggest challenge will be the collaboration documents, because we see that as I said, in a short time, we might have only the situation that you have online collaboration and online documents, which means that you need security services that encrypt documents appropriately, so that only the group working on that can access it, which makes it quite complicated, because first it calls upon identity-based encryption, because everyone who can identify him or herself in the group must have access to the document, and the group is dynamic, so someone might get in, out. Interesting question, what happens to keys? What happens to access? This means that if you access a document, it's not only that the key is per document, but it's per document access. If you have to leave the group because you leave the company, there's no reason that you can still access the later versions of the document, like the financial balance sheet, what have you. That should be taken from you. So it is the demand that it's not per document, but per document use, which increases the complexity. And now, my final slide, we have solved some of the problems. We have solved encryption and privacy and the sovereignty aspect, if you so wish, with calendar tasks by the standard S/MIME in some way when it comes to content. With the same thing with mail and with documents, but with not the solution that covers the collaboration as yet. And we have to work together with the providers on that. I hope I did give you some of the ideas, and I excuse this again for my low voice, which couldn't be that enthusiastic as it should. Thank you. Thank you.
So thank you very much for this, I think, revealing talk in a way for many of us. And I just wanted to use the last 2 minutes maybe for two or three questions that we can still ask maybe upon your presentation. And I encourage particularly students also to ask questions, but also, of course, everybody else. The one or two. All questions answered, I guess. Yes, please, Björn.
Could you speak a little up? Stork and IMI. Obviously, there's one problem. The problem is formulated very short. Regulations apply to member states, but don't apply to the Commission. Which means that the market, DG Mark, can decide on its own whether or not to use. Member states and DG Connect and Digit are pushing DG Mark to increasingly use that. EMI is using that in some of its applications, but is not using it throughout as yet. The Commission is using the so-called ECAS system, European Authentication System. ECAS is recognizing Stork and IDAS conforming identifications, but it's up to the service of the Commission whether this specific service is using all aspects of ECAS. So yes and no. But that has its reason. Telecom comes from a monopolistic way where each state had its monopoly on telecom, and therefore they could regulate and then produce in years ago. And this mentality is there. The private sector in computing industry is totally different. This diagram is an observation. I'm not saying it's good, it's wrong. I'm saying this is the observation, and what I'm saying is there's no one who pushes the standardization because not even the states are taking its role in an appropriate way. But that's the question: to what extent are we regulating the private sector?
Okay. Well, for those that still have some time before the next lecture starts, there will be some coffee outside, and I think Professor Bosch will also be here to answer some more questions. I wanted to give you a future antique, actually. I think it's the officially last glass bowl with a HIC logo here we have, and so it's a thank you, because from January onwards we'll be entering you. So. Thank you very much.